Okay, we'll begin. So my name is Andrew Klinik. I'm the group program manager of lots of stuff, frankly, but the app model is kind of what my team does. We couldn't be more excited to be here. It's less than a year than we were here at Build last year. The team is with me. I'm going to be giving you an overview of the app model today. We have about 7 or 8 sessions where they're going to go into deeper dives. So I highly recommend you go to those. But let's get into what we're going to talk about today. Really, I wanted to go through, why do we need an app model? It's quite often people are like, what the heck is the app model anyway? And then what does it mean, what it bring to me? And you know, this guy, I mean, look at him. So we have to use, we can't use real photographs. So Microsoft gives us stock images that are representing developers. So this is representing the more senior developer. Yeah, I'm getting closer to that. I can't decide. I think he might be English with a cap, but I think a Frenchman really has to pull off a cap quite like that. So he's pretty excited to be here, as are we. And I couldn't resist the photos. Does this guy look pretty quizzical? Why the heck do we need an app model? So really, Windows has never had a definition of an app model. You kind of know it when you see it, but there was nothing that really defined how your app should, how you should install it, how you should run it, how long it can run for, what it can or can't do. We gave you a bunch of guidelines over the years, and sometimes the guidelines kind of worked, sometimes they didn't, sometimes, you know, they actually kind of conflicted with each other on year by year. But it's been very difficult to actually build that, and it hasn't really been enforced. And we don't want to stop your app doing something, but we also want to ensure that apps run in a reasonable fashion. And there are some rules so the users, we can make some promises to the users, like uninstall. How many people like writing their install? Oh, look at that. Surprisingly, nobody. Now, frankly, some people on my team should be saying yes, because that's their job, but it's not something which you really want to invest time in. And getting uninstall to work is almost impossible, despite everything that you try to go do. So how do we go do that? The app model is really there to provide answers for that and provide you with tools to help you. So what is the universal Windows app model? It defines the app lifecycle for all apps on Windows. Obviously, the more modern UWP apps as well, but we're expanding that to include every app that runs on Windows. We want to make sure that it scales across all devices. So if we have an app model, if you move from desktop or mobile and you put it on a HoloLens or Xbox, if you have to follow a different app model there, then that means you're going to end up having to rewrite your application or change it dramatically to run on those machines. We don't want that to be the case. We want you to be able to scale and take advantage of the benefits. And you know, clearly, you can do more on a desktop than you can do on a Raspberry Pi. We don't expect you to have to take the lowest common denominator, but we want to have a scalable system such that it can make sense, and you can really focus on building your software as opposed to having to decipher the rules that Microsoft made up. And you know, we like to think of our team as cradle to grave. We'll install you, we'll help you run, we'll work out how much resource management, how much memory you get. We'll update you, be it from the store. Obviously, we love the store. But it's, you know, as Phil and Kevin pointed out today, being open is really, really important to us. You know, the PC came to where we are today by being an open ecosystem. We don't want to stop that. We want to embrace that. We want to make it better. We want to have a data model that is that works across all these devices. And then finally, you know, hopefully nobody will uninstall your app. But if they really want to, if they're going to uninstall your app, like, let's make sure they don't hate you, because it doesn't really uninstall and leave something around. We've all experienced that. So getting app to your customers, I was looking for something. There was no pictures of guys in hats that really got it across. Containers seemed the right thing. So last year, we introduced AppX as a common installation package for all the UWP apps. So you know, last year, it was PC, phone, HoloLens, IoT. They all use the same technology. So if you create a .appx, then that will deploy to all of those. This year, we're expanding that to work with existing desktop applications and on Xbox. You know, as you saw today, you'll be able to unlock your Xbox and be able to do that. And we're expanding where you can use AppX. Prior to our November release, essentially AppX meant You could do enterprise deployment, which is cool, or you could use the store. It was difficult, not impossible, but somewhat improbable to actually use that as your deployment mechanism to customers if you want to deploy from your own website. We want to make that better. So in November, we enabled you to sideload applications from anywhere. So the technology was there. But to install, we had to use PowerShell. Now, PowerShell is fine for us. We're developers. But I'm pretty certain my mother doesn't want to use PowerShell. We're introducing a modern installer. We considered calling it the modern software installer, but MSI didn't seem to have the right connotation to it. So we're not going to use that. But we're investing this to make it the installation stack on Windows. We want you to not have to use MSI. Now, do we have everything that MSI and ClickWants has today? No. It's a journey. We're starting on that. But essentially, we're putting those technologies on notice. My team also owns MSI, so we feel the pain. So we're highly incented to help you off of MSI, because fixing bugs from 15 years ago isn't really what the team joined for, right? So we want to make this a full platform for building the install experience. We wanted to make it a great experience both from the store, which it is today, but also from your own distribution. We wanted the desktop app converter, which is I'm not going to demo today. There is actually a session on that. And you can actually, one of our asks to you is to bring your installers. We have a booth up on the third floor, I believe, and we'll help you convert. We want you to bring all your, we want you to bring, hopefully not 16 million of them tomorrow, but starting today, we want to bring them on. We have the Project Centennial team actually here on site to help you out. And we really want to, we want you to leave with a converted app so you can start using that. And we want to extend the capabilities to provide extensions. If you're familiar with Edge extensions are coming. We built a framework to enable extensions, and the framework which we built for Edge, you can use in your application. I'm going to just skip that one. So in order to make it easier, we have the modern desktop app installer. Now, those of you who are familiar with my team, typically we don't do pixels. So we're actually pretty excited to have this icon. I think it's the first icon we've ever had. And frankly, it's the only box I've seen without an Amazon Prime sticker around it. So it's kind of nice to see what boxes used to look like. So we wanted you to enable installation of .appx packages without having to come from the store. We don't want you to have to use PowerShell. It's an app built on, it's a UWP application, which we built. It's going to be in the store. It's going to be updating from the store. So we're iteration is our first release of that. It's built on top of the deployment platform that's in Windows. And the one thing that we're not willing to change on is the Apex needs to be signed with a cert from a trusted root. The last thing you want a normal user to have to go do is do certificate management. In fact, as a developer, I actually don't want to do certificate management. It's not something which we want people to do. If your Apex is signed with a code signing cert from a trusted root in Windows, that's not just VeriSign, but typically tends to be VeriSign, then we'll go ahead and install it. So let's take a look at that progress bar. Again, we don't do UI, so this is pretty exciting for us. So the first thing comes to mind is like, okay, I want to install an application, and for me, when I think about existing .NET applications, paint.NET is right at the top of apps that I want to go do. So one of the great things about working in the Centennial team is we get to convert the apps that we use a lot, which hopefully is the apps that you use too. But here I have paint.NET with our lovely icon now for Apex, and I can double click on it. And the quick of you would have noticed it was still called the modern software installer, but we're going to change that. And I can click on install. And through the magic of UWP, we now have a progress bar, which is way better than our PowerShell script. And paint.net's ready to use. And if you notice now, paint.net shows up in Cortana, but it now shows up as a Windows app, because this is now deployed via Apex. This isn't the desktop app, which was from an MSI. I can click on paint.net, and if the demo gods are with me, paint.net. So the great thing about this is we didn't have to change anything on paint.net. Centennial, we don't promise that you won't have to change anything, but if your application is relatively well-behaved, then and it's followed the rules essentially we've been talking about for a long time, then it just works. Now, of course, you know how your application really works. Our very limited use of paint.net, it seems to work, so we're not going to go and convert apps for you. We expect you to do that because you'll know. I mean, who knows? Three levels down in a menu, maybe it doesn't work particularly well. So, paint.net's a classic .NET application from that perspective. So anything you have in AppX now, you can install with, be it from your website, sideloaded, from Carrier Pigeon, you decide in terms of we want to make it easy for you to be able to deploy and not have to think twice about using AppX. So enterprise deployment is a large part of what we do. And obviously people use SCCM, they use Intune, they use an MDM solution to deploy AppX today. So you can deploy Win32 applications now using this. But we're introducing Windows Store for Business. And this is, think of this as a private store for your application to distribute apps in volume to your users using your identity. So you don't have to come in using MSA. You can use your Active Directory. You can put the apps which you want to distribute to your users. Now, I particularly love this side because, looking at it and it's like, wow, that person has three hands. The Windows Store for Business is pretty special. There's going to be a whole session on how to use the Windows Store for Business and how it can apply to you. And I highly encourage you to go to that. And when's that, John? That's Thursday at 6 o'clock? 6:30. So in case you didn't want to drink beer, come and find out about the Microsoft Store for Business at 6:30. So if we look back, last year we introduced Project Centennial. I was like, okay, we've started it. This year, I'm so excited because we're actually shipping it. You're actually going to get bits and be able to use this. And we want you to start with us in terms of we are not finished. The Project Centennial, the desktop bridge, is not entirely finished. We want you to iterate with us. We believe it enables a whole bunch of applications. But we won't know until we actually start using your application. So we really want your feedback. And I encourage you to be as brutally honest as you can be. In terms of, and we'll start with converting today. The whole goal here was to improve the Windows platform for all developers. I mean, yes, we want to take existing desktop applications and make them available. But when we start doing that, it ends up putting pressure on our deployment stack in places we haven't done in UWP. So how do we make it better? And the goal of Project Centennial was not that your app is not a Project Centennial app. It's about how do we make the whole Windows platform better and support more and more applications. We want you to be able to essentially keep most, if not all, of your Win32.NET code. But we're not saying you won't have to make some changes. For example, if your installer had a EULA in your installer, now the install experience is now either from the store or our modern installer, you might have to think about that. So, we've been working with some companies, they've moved the EULA to the first run of their application. Think about the way the Office used to work prior to Office 2013. It's quite a different installing experience, so think about that. But we also wanted you to maintain a common code base between Windows 10 and Windows 7. We're aggressively upgrading people to Windows 10, but realistically, we know that your customers are still on Windows 7. We want you to be able to continue to have one code base and have maybe two installers, be it an MSI if you're just doing it yourself and an AppX. But we also know a whole bunch of you using Install Shield and Wix, and we're working the Install Shield and Wix guys so that you can have one setup project with them, and they will essentially spit out an MSI for your Windows 7 customers and an AppX for your Windows 10 customers. So if you're using those tools, which I know many of you are, you won't have to change anything. You just have to get the latest version of their tools. And we couldn't be happier working with them. The Wix guys sent us this incredible video, which is about 10 minutes long, so we can't show you that, but like in terms of, they got it going in a couple of weeks, and it was pretty amazing. So we want to do that. And why are we doing this? Well, we want to make sure that users get the applications that they want. We want you to be able to continue to make money. We want you to be able to get as many users as you possibly can. So the modern installer technology for desktop apps, its goal is no DLL hell. Nobody wants DLL hell. We want to get away from registry bloat. Frankly, some of the guidelines that we gave you back in the day ended up with the registry getting bigger and bigger and slowing down your machine, even though you are not actually running the application. So now what we'll do, you can write to the registry just as much as you would do normally, but it, rather than actually going to the registry, it goes into a reg.dat for your application. We want to do a clean install, uninstall. So right now, it's very difficult. You can put files everywhere, you can put stuff in the registry. Being able to uninstall the application is kind of an art as much as it is a science. So we're putting all the files and data essentially into your app folder. So uninstall essentially is just delete that folder. So we can make the application much more self-contained and isolated from the system. Automatic and silent updates from the store, obviously with Apex. The code runs as a user. If your application only works by elevating to admin, your app won't work in Centennial. And that's by design. Essentially, we want people to be writing, and the vast majority of apps run as the user. That's not to say the user can't choose to elevate your application to admin if they want to, but we want to encourage people to update, to run as a user. It makes it a lot easier for us to update. The last thing you want to do is your app is installing from the, updating from the store at 3 a.m. You wake up, you log in the first time, you see the lovely UAC prompt saying, look. So we don't want that to happen. And likewise, we want to ensure that we can control what these applications are doing and being able to update them. So no drivers installs and no NT services. That's both from a security perspective, but also anybody who's tried to update a driver pretty much means you need to reboot. We don't want the store rebooting people's machines at 3 a.m. So what do? You run the desktop app converter, and these slides are just, these things just animate too pretty just to, so you convert your existing installer into an Apex. Once you've got the Apex, you don't have to continually convert it. You work with the Apex just as you would do for a UWP. And once you have the Apex, then you test and update your application, and I'll show you this in a minute. And you continue to use make Apex and update the Apex. And then finally, you're gonna create an Apex and you're gonna publish and distribute it to the place that makes sense for you. So the key thing here is essentially is exactly the same as you would do with a UWP. And you don't have to change your toolset and reconvert every time. A lot of what the misconceptions whenever we talk to people think they have to convert to an Apex at every build. You just have to do it once. You have to create the Apex, and once you have the Apex, you just update. I'm gonna skip over to the demo. So when I was thinking about what demo to build, those of you following me on Twitter, we had a little bit of a spat in terms of, is WPF the future? What are we gonna go do? And so I was thinking about doing a demo of a WPF app, but then I was like, well, maybe they think that I'm actually just hacked WPF to get it to work. So I was building a demo. I was like, okay, so what dev tool can I not hack? And it was fairly obvious to me that VB6 is like, can I get a VB6 app and get that running as a UWP? Can we bring that thing kicking and screaming to the future? And the answer is, of course we can. So here I have, everybody's archetypal VB6 app, message box, hello world. I've built it into project. Here's my folder, and I've converted it. Now, I'm not gonna show you conversion because it's a command line tool and it's pretty boring to watch. So in this case, you notice I have an Apex manifest, and I'll show you, here's my Apex manifest. It looks like a standard Apex manifest with a couple of things. We have this capability, run full trust. At the moment, your if you convert your application, it will run in full trust because we want to ensure that your code continues to work. But other than that, it's just the plain old thing. Now, obviously, I had to rename it. Awesome VB6 seemed like the appropriate name to call this. And then, you know, I can just do an add apex package, register, and if I go to my start menu now, there we are, awesome VB6. Here's my VB6 app running, and you know, I get hello world. And you know, just to prove that this just really does work, and I don't have to change anything, I can just go into VB and say hello build, and then all the keystrokes on VB6 are come flooding back. It's obviously Alt FK to make me. Took me quite a while to remember how to build a VB6 app. I was like, where's the build command? Okay. And yes, I want to replace that. And now I go to my awesome VB6 app and hello build. Now, the key thing here is like, well, okay, so I want my existing app to work, but I want to take advantage of the cool new features. So one of the features which we've had since Windows Phone 7 is live tiles. Now, it turns out live tiles obviously are cool, but actually have a dramatic impact on the user engagement of your app. Working with customers, and just by adding a live tile, really doing nothing else, their user engagement went up 20%. Now, think about that. Well, adding a live tile is maybe, well, it's probably a couple of hours of making your live tile look like work in terms of ensuring, you know, making that work in your code takes, you know, a couple of minutes, if that. So first of all, I'm just going to go uninstall my VB6 app. But wait, it's coming back. It gets better than that. Oh, whoops. Okay. So here I have, I just uncomment in my, and what I'm going to do here is I'm going to add to my tile, I'm going to set a recurrence to a URI, and I can, which will, every time now my live tile will go and get that from a website, in this case from andrewbars.net, which is one of the guys on our team. And I can just save this, and I just go back up here and re-register it. And here's my awesome VB6 app, but let's pin it to start. And I get to see, hopefully, there we go. Okay, so now I have a complete live tile for my VB6 app. I didn't have to write any code. And you can take advantage of UWP features in your app. Now, if you were writing in .NET, which I know many of you are, if you're writing in WPF, we give your application an identity now, so you can pretty much call the vast majority of the UWP APIs direct from your application. You can also add other applications within it. So you can add a UWP background task, you can add an app service, you can add a UWP app in its own right, and get those to communicate. There's a great session in the Centennial that's coming out later this afternoon that shows that in more depth. So you can do this even to VB6. So live tiles is really about getting better user engagement. So how do we get better user engagement? And this apparently is also a developer. He's very excited to be here. So one of the key ways, obviously live tiles are a key part of that, but Action Center is another great way to get more engagement with your users. And in Windows 10, the anniversary edition, I don't know, maybe we should buy a gift or something, I'm not sure, but is, The Action Center's taken up, you know, we've really enhanced Action Center. So you can now put hero images, so you can see a much larger image. You can change the app logo in the group header so that if you wanted to, at the moment you just get your app logo, you can change it to a user in this case, so you can see that. You can override that, and you can do complex layouts. So that all the mechanisms that Cortana does, in this case, apparently I'm flying from somewhere much more fun than we are right now, to Seattle, you can take advantage of that in your application by using the same mechanism that that Cortana and our first parties do. So we build a platform, we build all our solutions on top of that, and we make that available to you. So there's a common template now that works on Tiles, Toast, and notifications. So you can think about how you want to engage with a user. You don't have to use a different technology depending on how you want to engage with them. And then another thing we got is like, okay, so I have notifications, I have something in the Action Center, I have Tiles. How do I keep those all in sync? I'm sure you've all seen that where you end up having like, you know, your Tile has like a count of three, your notification you've dismissed two, and they're not in sync. So we got a lot of feedback. How do I achieve that? And we're introducing Notification Listener in this upcoming release that allows your application to keep in sync. Now, I tried to explain this in slides, and it didn't work. So I asked my team to help me, and you know they're very helpful. They're also they're not averse of poking fun at their boss. So this is what they gave me. So clinic quotes, which is just, you know, the greatest app in the world. So this is me last year. This is my kind of lucky presentation shirt. I seem to wear it year after year after year. So it really is last year, just so maybe I can redo it. And then you can say, well, let me hear a clinic quote. I don't think I'll ever find a stable job. I'm not that comfortable around horses, very exciting. And here we are, and it's up in my Action Center, but what if I was going to go to clinic quotes, whoops, and pin it to my start? So I get a nice, and you know, they really went to town, even created me a lovely icon on that. So you'll see, and we'll give us another quote, and my quote will show up here, but also show up over here. You notice it's two, and you notice down here on my taskbar, a new thing for UWP, you can now add counts down onto your taskbar, which is a often requested feature. But I can go over here, and I can dismiss one, and then hopefully, in a second, you see everything keeps in sync. So you can now take advantage of everything and not feel like you have this disconnected experience. I'd like to thank Matt and Corey for those photos that will never leave me. I've tried, and that meme continues. But then we think about Action Center. What we really wanted to do is like, okay, we introduced Action Center and I could get notifications from that device. What we really want to do as a user is to have an Action Center that reflects all my notifications, no matter what device I'm running on. So we're introducing Action Center in the cloud, so I can receive the action notifications no matter what device. Now, obviously, Windows Phone, Windows, Xbox, but also Android and iOS. So well, no, I haven't done iOS right now, but we have Android going, so if I get a notification on my Android device, it will show up on my Windows desktop Action Center. So I can dismiss it on my Action Center, and it will dismiss everywhere. Because as a user, users don't think about, well, I have a different notification on one machine or the other. I just want to dismiss it and it to go away. Now, of course, you get to have complete control over that. You might want to have different notifications on different machines, and that's okay. But if you want to have the ability to dismiss everywhere, then you can do that. There's an in-depth session on this. The other thing that's really important, which we introduced last year, is the ability to actually take actions on the notifications so that you will be able to, I might get a notification from an app that's only on my phone and not on my PC. I can quick reply on that, hit enter, and it will actually send that action for me from my PC. So I type on my PC where I tend to be most of the time during the day, and it will use my phone, be it Android or Windows phone. So we think this is really going to help in terms of really how do you talk to your customers. And if you think about it, the Action Center of notifications is probably the most direct way that you can talk to your customers. You can send a notification specifically to Corey. And there are not many ways that you can do that. And we want to ensure that that gets to your customers no matter what platform they're running. So this is a major shift for us in terms of really ensuring that you can, your code can run in the places it needs to, and we're going to help you do that, be it via Xamarin or through Action Center in the cloud. So engaging users across all our devices, you know, think about how many devices you have. Think about it, I mean, for me, my kids have tons of devices. And now apps and devices are really isolated, and isolation is great in terms of it keeps us safe, but you know, it's not actually helping us get anything, make it better. You think about how many devices you have probably on you right now, and they don't talk to each other. It's almost impossible to build the solution that could take advantage of your PC or the phone in your pocket. So today we have app-to-app and app services which run on your machine, but we can do better. And the key to doing better is something which we're currently calling Project Rome. Now, it's clearly not going to be called Project Rome when it ships, but that's... and the notion of Project Rome is, you think about Roman roads, they really helped communication and helped expand commerce. And, you know, the Spanish steps in Rome, and we're on the first step of getting where we need to be. But this is really about connecting apps and your devices. So it enables the user to connect, manage, and control any connected app, no matter what the device, be it Windows, Android. We want to make sure that that works. And we want to make sure that it works via the cloud. Clearly, we're all in the cloud. But there are things that if you know that if my phone is in my pocket and it's right next to my PC, then I should be able to take advantage of that, irrespective of cloud, and be able to build much better solutions because I know where my device is. And we want to expose the user's device graph. At the moment, knowing what devices a user has is almost impossible to do. Lots of people have tried to do it, but I think one of the key things that Microsoft can do is that we really deeply care about all the devices that you use, be it from an IoT device all the way through to whatever phone you're using, whatever PC you're using. So we're building out a device graph, and we will go ahead and discover and enable you to connect to those devices and be able to communicate across those. And our belief here is this will really help build solutions that are more human-centric as opposed to technology. We want the technology seems to essentially go away so you can build solutions that take advantage of all the computing devices, and users should just be thinking about how they're trying to achieve what they're trying to achieve, not how to get my phone to connect to my PC. So Project Rome, it's not really a brand new technology. We've really been building on, you know, smart glass. The smart glass team is part of my team in terms of, you know, did pioneering work here. If you saw the smart glass app for Game of Thrones on Xbox, then it would actually keep you in sync with where you were. So you could find out if he really is dead. I don't know, but it's not that smart to actually know what. But the key thing is they really kept the PC and the Xbox and your phone, iOS and Android, kept those in sync together and building application experiences that you couldn't before. And then app-to-app contracts and services, we wanted to make sure that that was an important part. And we didn't want to go and rebuild a whole set of technologies, and you have to throw out everything we did. So we built app-to-app contracts and services with this in mind, with the future, so that you can communicate between devices. And we believe this is going to help you get user engagement. We're all struggling with this in terms of, well, geez, even if I can get somebody to install my app, how do I get people to actually continue to use my application? One of the key things we're introducing is the ability to handle web links. So if somebody sends you a link to your website, but that you have an application that's available, the likelihood of the user wanting to use your app rather than the website is pretty high. So we're enabling you just drop a JSON file in the root of your website, and then you can say, okay, well, look, I'm going to allow this particular application to handle all my URI requests. The great thing about this, you're sending around a web URI, so even if the app isn't there, it will still work. So it's guaranteed to work. It will just work better if your application is there. Device discovery, and then really to be able to do cross-device communication. Now, this is kind of an interesting concept to try and talk about in the abstract. So I've asked Sean on our team to come and give you an idea. Now, again, I asked Sean to help me, and Sean took this as an opportunity to was like, well, how can we embarrass clinic a little bit more? So here he is, without further ado, Sean, with I don't know. Did you ever have a name, Sean?
The reason Andrew invited me up here to do this is because this demo involves the network. And of course, as we all know, up on stage, very often the network is not cooperative. So he wanted me to take the fall for it as opposed to himself. So sort of as a bit of revenge, what I did is I built this app for my phone, which I call the Clinic Browser. That's a picture of him right there in his superhero uniform. And what it does is it allows me to go back in time and look at all the great sessions that Andrew has done throughout the years, from various build conferences and all the way back to Mix and so on. And, you know, I can take this with me on my phone wherever I go so I can listen to him. And, of course, you guys can't really hear this because it's playing on the phone. Maybe in the front row you can hear this. So, you know, wouldn't it be great if I could, you know, share this with everyone here? And just so you're aware, I'm projecting my phone here onto the screen using our projection app. But you can see at the top here I have devices available. And so I can discover all of my devices. And I can select here this Surface Book here, and I can actually launch the app now on my Surface Book.
All right,
book.
So.
And the experience continues.
Let's start, 2 minutes late. So my name's Andrew Klinik. I'm a group program manager
on
the
developer platform. So we can all watch, you know, Andrew give a session.
In, Windows Phone.
And of course, I can control
it from my phone. About the application.
So you guys can see over
so
here.
So think about us, we're the plumbers. We don't
do
any of the
I can click,
UI,
and I can go forward.
Fundamental.
And I can go through. And, of course, that stopped playing.
Where's the stop button?
Multitasking.
Yeah, there should be a stop button.
And, I think our video really stopped playing because we're off screen.
The engine below all your applications.
You guys can still hear it.
So today, the
experience
really
is also completely
about
transferred
about
over to the PC. So I can actually exit it on the phone
18
here.
18 months now.
And it's continuing to play through the speakers on the laptop.
Not being able to tell you about it.
And the video stopped playing.
So great you're all here. And virtually all here.
Please make the video.
Thank you for all coming. We'll make that stop. Anyways.
So Sean, how did you launch the app from the phone?
Well, so that was with Launch URI that we just talked about, and that enables us to actually launch a URI, from one device from another. So we can go through that quickly. I'll show it to you again. What we were doing here is we were again discovering the devices, and then we just do a Launch URI, what will happen is the app, of course, yeah. It's not
and the demo gods are not with us for the second one. So. But the key thing here is Launch URI async is something which we've had locally for a couple years now. And this is just extending the existing technology by using the device graph and being able to say, okay, well, launch URI async on that Surface Book. Right. And you know, you could do it on a different phone, you can and do it vice versa.
And also across iOS and Android as well, we're enabling a lot of these features cross-platform. So if you want to find out how this kind of magic works, we have a session Thursday at 2:00 that I'll be giving on this technology called Connected Devices Platform and Project Roam. So be sure to come and check that out.
So, you know, Project Roam really enables us to take the existing app model and kind of level up and let it run across all your devices, let it run in the cloud, and take advantage of all the capabilities that you can build. And you know, with the introduction of the Xamarin, you could go build that app, and the same app could run on Android. Now, obviously, you can use Objective-C, you can use Java, whatever you want. You don't have to use Xamarin to make this work. But we're doing the work there to ensure that it takes advantage of those other platforms. And working closely with you know, the likes of Google and Apple in terms of how do we do app links to make the web links work. And we believe this really presents a great opportunity for you to start building better applications. Okay, but as you start building applications, you think about user engagement, you also have to think about stickiness. How do I essentially make it such that people never want to uninstall my application? One of the great ways to do this is to make your application a platform. So with App Services and Launch URI for results, you can take this loosely coupled mechanism such your application can, you know, people can start calling methods in your application and start using building solutions that pull all these together. But really want, you know, at some point, you want to build a tighter integration and build it into your application. And so we're introducing the application extensibility framework. And think of this as, if you're familiar with Edge extensions, is that it's a complete extension add-in model for your application. Edge extensions are built on this. Now, obviously, Edge extensions only run inside of Edge. This is the ability to provide an extensibility model so people can write add-ins for your application. Now, it presents some interesting business opportunities here. One, if more and more people write add-ins and people are reliant on those add-ins, the more likely they are to keep your application. I think Office and Photoshop are great examples of that. But think about the ecosystem you can build around that. There are Photoshop plugins that cost as much as Photoshop. And we'll be able to integrate this IO using your own distribution mechanism, but also from within the store, and we want to make it easier for you to go build that. So how does it work? Essentially, your application publishes a contract, and which you think of that as your public mechanism, is like, I'm going to publicize an extension point for my app. And then extensions are built to that contract. So Edge publishes a contract for Edge extensions, and then you in your app manifest say, okay, well, look, I'm writing an Edge extension. But in this case, I've got a little Paint app. I'm publishing a Paint extension. And then I can go to the store and install an application that is a Paint extension. And then the Paint application can query the system saying, okay, what extensions do I have? And then you can load them and unload them and update them just as you would do an Apex an existing application. And the great thing about this is we provide you with all the data models such that you can provide your own experience for that in terms of how you want to unload them. But also, you can uninstall those directly from within your application. So essentially, you think of it, if you're writing the extension, you're writing an application that runs in the context of another application. Now, it's not to say an extension couldn't be part of a larger application. It certainly could be. And you can use JavaScript or an app service to actually build this extension. So JavaScript's obviously pretty lightweight, and you can do lots of cool things there. But if you really want to go to town, you can build an app service and have a completely native extension on that. The final thing that we get asked about a lot is multitasking. And again, thanks to the wonders of the Microsoft photography, apparently this is what we do. We do our laundry and code at the same time. So this guy is obviously a major multitasker. What we heard from you is, look, we want to do multitasking. Background tasks are cool, but frankly, it's a pain in the neck having to write two processes. Multiproc coding. Nobody woke up in the morning and go, well, geez, I wish I could write two processes to get my app done. So we're introducing single process multitasking. And so you don't need to use tasks unless it makes sense. Tasks still make sense if you really care about memory usage. You want it to run, you don't want a foreground experience. So an app service running in the background, a good example of this is our People app. If your Facebook integrates with an app service, you want the People app to sync from Facebook. You don't want the Facebook app to come up and interfere with the People application. So we still love tasks. We're improving shutdowns, so you're much likely to get rudely shutdowns, another piece of feedback. It's we will attempt to try and give you as much notice as we can that we're going to shut you down because of a memory limitation. And that will make it a lot easier for you to close down your database connection, whatever you need to go do. So what does this mean to you? The primary one, if you write background audio, your life just got a whole bunch easier in terms of, background audio is the number one use of background tasks. Background audio, we want to ensure that you have a guaranteed experience so that when I'm playing music, it doesn't just stop because I launched the browser, so it continues, so I can continue listening. So I just have to declare a background media playback capability. Play the media however you like, be it the media player that comes in XAML. You could write your own custom player. No registration code, no background management. We will just take control of your application when it's running in the background, and we will provide it as many guarantees as we can so that your user experience remains the same. Now, if you're not doing background music, we have extended execution for foreground apps. Now, those of you who've been to these sessions before, we've actually introduced this a while back. Hardly anybody knows about it. So you can, right now, on Windows 10, the November release, you can ask for more time. Now, obviously, in the anniversary edition, we're doing more here. You can ask for up to 10 minutes on battery, and no limits when you're plugged in. So you can ask, so this is a great way of, if you're saving a large application, a large file, then you want, and it's, you get your average 20, 30 seconds, maybe it's going to take longer than that, you can ask for more time. And if we can, we will give it to you. Now, we want to look at power and ensure that we're not running down the battery. And the key thing here is, so more likely to get that if you're plugged in. And then you can always keep my app running. Now, this is great if the user really needs to do this. Like, for example, if you're doing navigation software and you want it to run in the background all the time, which makes sense because that's why the user's running it, you can tell the OS to do that, and we'll do whatever we can. If the device is plugged in, there's no limits. If it's on batteries, then we will limit to what you can do, but the user can opt out in battery saver. If they really, really need your application to run, then it's like, hey, look, like for example, if I need to encode a video and I don't have a power socket supply and I really need it to run all the time, that's my choice as a user. I go to do that. But we want to give meaningful defaults such that we can increase the great battery life that we see on things like Surface Book. So in summary, the thing we've really tried to look at this time is like, how do we ensure to make it easier for you to get your applications? How do we enable that all the applications you have, all your existing ones and all your new ones can take advantage of that, and so that you can distribute them however you want to? Action Center in the cloud really helps you pull that together. And Project Roam, even though it says connected platform, missed that in my slides, is really provides you with a rich integration capability to build applications that transcends devices. And then finally, app extensions and multitasking really enable you to take advantage of other code and build a richer, more productive environment for your applications. So, you know, there are 8 sessions available to go into more detail in pretty much every single one of these. You know, there are less sessions at Build this year, but, you know, the app model has, you know, about 12% of the sessions at Build because there's so much we've added to this. And I've only kind of touched the surface on this. And there's, I think the next one is Centennial this afternoon. And so I highly encourage you to go do that. That's the end of our presentation. We can't wait to get your feedback on this. We really think we've made a fairly major step and made it a lot easier for you to build your applications, even the VB6 application. So we want to get your feedback. I think we have about 8 minutes now, but we'll be out the back, and we're here all week. And there's coding sessions. There's a hands-on lab as well, right? And a workshop. So we're trying to mix up Build a little bit, so it's not just session focused. So there are specific ones to do app services and extensions. So thank you. Thanks for coming. We have time for questions. And shockingly, Colin is the first person with a question. So.
Hi, Andrew. It's not on. Oh, it is now. You showed us that new installer, the simple one for installing AppX.
Yes.
Without PowerShell.
Yes.
Can you talk about how that works in upgrade scenarios and how it works if there's a contention between that and an install from the store?
That's a great question. So how does it do upgrades? Specifically from the store, if you were deploying a store signed and a version, so if you had a store app and then somebody double-clicked on an AppX that was also store signed, then it would update, but it would continue to update from the store. Now, of course, you're complete control of that. If your AppX is not store signed, then it can still, and so you can maintain different paths if you want to, which is kind of interesting if you want to do beta or different flighting types of scenarios. So you can opt in however you want to on that. So and on the update, if it's not from the store, I'm looking at John, it should just update itself, right? So if you have version 1 installed and you double-click on AppX with version 1.2, it will just update in place using the install.
And so if you install from AppX, will it automatically install from the store from then on, or can you stop that happening?
It's up to you. If you install a store-signed AppX, then it will update from the store. But if you don't, then it's just your whatever distribution that you want.
Great, thanks.
Hi, if you're using applications like DevExpress or similar, like Infragistics, will the app port still work to the from Windows app to the store?
We hope so. We would like to know. is one of the goals at Build is to get those types of applications. We would love you to bring, if you have some of those, mm-hmm. bring them along, and we'll take a look. I don't think we've tried an Infragistics app yet. Well, not knowingly anyway. So But our goal is to convert as the, our conversion knows nothing about your installer.
Okay.
So it actually looks at the machine state at the beginning of the install and essentially captures all the changes during that. So it's not like we understand MSI. We just say, okay, give us your installer, and we'll run it.
Cool.
Thanks. We do actually understand MSI, but we didn't want to limit it just to MSI.
I'm assuming the converter is working for Windows 10, right? How about the server? If I have Win32 apps on the server, is that coming?
That's a good question. Will AppX be able to deploy to the server? Yes. The converter I'm looking at, I don't know, have we tried Centennial on the server yet? No. It's not for it's not for server apps right now. There you go.
Hey, I was wondering with the ability to, like I said, double click install the AppX, is that also for current modern apps you're working on or universal
yes.
apps when you play?
Yes, so the double click handle will work on any AppX.
And do you know if there's work with flighting tools like HockeyApp, where right now you have to bundle your AppX and your manifest and in a zip file with your PowerShell, but do you know if there's plans to be able to easier?
I don't believe we've thought about HockeyApp yet, but yes, okay. It seems like a good idea.
All right, thanks.
Okay, I'm going to get down because these lights are killing me. So I'll keep asking questions, though. I can't see anything.
I was going to say, you said that UWP programs will have to be signed. Will it be possible to kind of create your own certificate to sign the program with, and then it'll run on whoever has the certificate? Or do you have to use the certificate you get through the Microsoft developer account?
No, it's the certificate needs to come from a trusted root on Windows. So if it's like, for example, VeriSign is a trusted root. So they'll hand out standard code signing certs today, as you would have done with AuthentiCode in the past. This is the requirement. So self-signed certificates. So if you create a cert on your machine that doesn't have a root, the double-click installer will not install those. Because as a user, you don't want normal users to ever install self-signed certs. So as long as it's come from a trusted root on that machine, so you could have your own certificate root if you're an enterprise and add that. It's entirely up to you. But it has to come from a trusted root on the machine. And there's a standard set of trusted roots on the classic Windows install. I'm not sure exactly how many there are, but VeriSign is the most obvious one.
Okay.
Hi, when sideloading an app with a new installer, do you still have to execute the PowerShell scripts to sign the app and actually install the package?
To sign the applications, make AppX and signing, you still use the whatever tool, be it Visual Studio can do that for you too, but yes, you use the standard make AppX and the signing tools to do that as a developer. But then as the user would never have to run PowerShell.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
How can third-party packaging tools build universal apps from existing Mesaic projects?
So the best way to do that is come and talk to the Centennial team that will be up on the third floor, I believe it is, right, in terms of that. And we can give you all the details about what you have to change to make an AppX.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.